Two questions. First of all, how do you balance the personal with the professional in this relationship? And second of all, what does Monica bring to the Imperial Flames?
She's a great partner in life and also in the band. She and I started as friends, and she wanted to help book the band. And she was in a number of bands before, and she, of course, she's been singing professionally since she was 6 years old. She used to sing in the Mexican clubs in Rockford, Illinois.
Okay.
Backing up touring Mexican stars. We met, she wasn't working so much because the band she was with was in a car accident, and her fiancé was killed.
Oh, wow. So
I met her, and we became friends, and I didn't know she sang. Eventually, she started sitting in with the band, and it's been... When she was a child, she met Etta James, and it kind of inspired her.
Okay, so she brings a lot of stage presence to the band?
Yeah, and she's good at arrangements as well and harmonies. So between Jeff, the drummer, and myself, and Monica, we do a lot of harmonies.
All right, let's play Looking for a Man. It's the song for the new album by Dave Weld and the Imperial Flames. Monica Meyer on vocals. Slip Into a Dream is the album. This is GLT's Talkin' Blues. Dave, early on, you were one of the many white guys who ventured to the south and west side of Chicago because you wanted to hear the blues.
That was the deal.
Yeah, well, Bob Corator, someone I've talked to recently, he did a similar thing coming from one of the wealthier white suburbs. And, you know, Bruce Iglauer, actually, I think he went to college in Chicago just so he could hit the blues clubs. What was it that drew you to these areas of Chicago to go hear these blues guys?
They didn't want me on the north side. And so that made the choice easier.
Are you serious?
Well, sure. The north side was always kind of snobby for me, and there was always, guys that could play a little better, and they really didn't want to help, and they weren't that friendly. So I went over to the west side, and oh, my God, it was like night and day. Hey, man, how you doing? You come on up. Are you coming up with us? Come on up. Come play, you know. Oh, you can't play that well? Well, don't worry about it. Just turn down and follow me. I got your back. Come on.
Wow. You know, Bob Corator told me something very similar. He said, man, when I went down there, they were so welcoming, and I didn't know what to expect at first. But once they saw, I think he said something like, once they saw I was really serious about this and I was really interested in them and the music, they welcomed me with open arms. And it sounds like you had a very similar experience.
Right. And I never felt threatened. And these are the worst neighborhoods. People drive around these neighborhoods, and I just pick up my guitar case and walk through them and say, hi, how you doing? Hey, where's the club? And ask for directions. I never had a problem. I was never robbed. Well, once I had my coat stolen with my keys in it, so I couldn't get home. But it was friendly and fun.
Well, it's interesting. Bruce Iglauer fell in love with Hound Dog Taylor, and now that's the reason Alligator Records exists today, because he wanted to record his favorite band, and now we've got one of the great blues labels of all time. You too fell in love with Hound Dog Taylor, or was it just his band that you fell in with?
Well, first, for me, it was J.B. Hutto.
Well, that was first?
Yeah. I saw J.B., actually, I saw him on the north side, but then we hooked up, he gave me his phone number, and I started going to his house. And at that time, I was doing an interview with him for Living Blues magazine.
Okay.
Actually, you're right. My first band professionally was Hound Dog Taylor's band. JB was going to Boston, and he was using Brewer Phillips and Ted Harvey, the House Rockers. And they did rehearsals over Brewer's house, and JB brought me. they were wonderful. And I did some stories for the Reader as well, the local.
Sure, Chicago Reader, yeah.
Yeah, and so when JB left town to go to Boston to do more tours, actually they fell out is what happened. I hung with Brewer and Ted at their gig. It was called Sweet Peas on 43rd Street in Ingleside. And it was a black club on the south side. And that was every Friday, Saturday night for about a year. After about a year, the band broke up because poor Brewer was stabbed in the throat by his wife for messing around with another woman. And he made it. He was okay, you know, but he actually got back with his wife, Susie, and they stayed together to the end.
Wow.
But the band wasn't doing too much after that. You know, but that was really influential to me. It was the first black club I was really at. And it was crowded and packed. And I was the only white guy, and there was dancers on stage, and they danced, you know, semi-nude and stuff. And it was really a cultural eye-opener for me. I had my Guild CE-100, 1954, my first guitar. So I went from there. I went to the 1815 Club over on the west side, and that was the home stand for Howlin' Wolf and his band. And the Wolf had recently passed away, and I started playing with that band every Friday, Saturday night. And that was about a year. And that was Eddie Shaw, Hubert Sumlin, Chico Chisholm, Detroit Jr., Lafayette Gilbert on bass. There was a lot of sit-ins there.
You're telling me this amazing story about how supportive J.B. Hutto was of you as a young guy. And it sounds like he wasn't the only one. When you went to these West Side clubs, others were very encouraging and welcoming as well. But why is that? Why did J.B. take such a liking and want to make sure that, hey, Dave, hang with it. You're great. Why were they so encouraging?
Well, I remember Chico Chisholm once told me, because I had that old beat-up 1954 CE-100 Guild, and he took a look at that, and he said, you know, Dave, see that guitar there? You can make millions with that guitar.
But what's the difference between the North clubs, who you would characterize as somewhat snobby, and these guys, who you're sort of a foreign object to these guys? What is the difference? Why did they embrace you, and the ones, say, on the North side, not embrace you?
Everybody seemed to be jockeying for position on the North side. They want to get on stage. They want to be heard. But on the West side, you're there, and you've driven over there, and there's not too many white people there. And when you expressed a real sincere interest in the black culture, and you want to know things, you're polite, you're responsive, and you're energetic, and you want to play, and they see you want to play, and they know from experience what it's like to be coming from the ground up, you know, no help, no money, just the desire to succeed and learn. And they see this, and they also know that your success is their success. The musicians there knew, well, okay, this guy, maybe his parents are lawyers. Maybe his parents will book us over to Paris or Germany. Although that wasn't too much stress, but that I think that was also in the back of their mind, you know, crossing over to mainstream society, because they're not the mainstream society.
is your alley. Pick up some of these old tin cans, maybe I'll sell them for some drinks. Hey, they got some empties here with some leftovers.